So I'd like to explore together with you this morning the inverted nuns of Sefer Bamidbar, what are referred to as the nun ha-hafuchim or ha-hafuchot, or the nun ha-hafucha, the nun minuzeret. And if you take a look here at source number one, I put these two psukim that come from Bamidbar, Perek Yud, Bamidbar chapter 10, two psukim that we're very familiar with. Vayehi ben Soa Aaron, Vayomer Moshe, Kuma Hashem, Viafutsu, Oyevecha, Vianusu, Misanecha, Mipanecha. And the next pasuk, Uvnucho, Yomar, Shuva Hashem, Rivevot, Alfei Yisrael. And these psukim should be familiar to each and every one of you. We say these psukim when we take the Torah out and when we return the Torah to the ark. And if you look inside of a Torah, these two psukim are surrounded by these inverted nuns. Most of the time, it's just an inverted or a mirror image of a nun. Sometimes, it's inverted and upside down as well. And here, I put a little picture, in case you're not familiar, a little example here in source number one of how it appears in the Torah. Now, we have a number of different textual anomalies that appear throughout our Torah. We have large letters, for example, like the Ayin and Dalid in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We have a small letter, like the letter Aleph in the word Vayikra, at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. We have other types of glyphs or diacritics in our Torah. We've got dots, dot by the story of Lot and his daughters when they left Sodom. We have dots over the pasuk, Hanistarot LaShem Elokeinu, V'niglot Lanu, L'Vaneinu. We have a broken letter Vav, which we'll read in a few weeks, the beginning of Parashat Pinchas, in the word Shalom, Briti Shalom. The letter Vav is broken, and there are all sorts of interpretations. We're familiar with the Midrashim, sometimes quoted by Rashi, to explain these textual anomalies. Well, in Parashat Balotcha, the beginning of the sixth Aliyah, we have these inverted nuns. And the question that I'd like to explore together with you this morning is why? Why? Why are they there? What are they doing, these inverted nuns? And secondly, can we add a letter to the Torah? The other examples I mentioned either weren't letters or were small or large letters. Can we just add additional letters to a Sefer Torah willy-nilly? And finally, why dafka the letter nun? Is there some significance to the fact that we're adding a letter nun as opposed to, you know, some other letter, an aleph, a zayin, I don't know, a lamid, a chaf? Why dafka a nun? So take a look at source number two. This is Rashi. Rashi there, on the pasuk, Vayehi bin Soa ha'aron, writes, Asalo simaniot, milafanav umila acharav. That Hashem, or the Torah, made simaniot. How would you define simaniot?
Signs.
Okay, signs. Good. Signals. Okay, good. I like that too. Before and after, lomar she'en ze mekomo. As if to say, this is not its place. As we'll see, these two psukim do not belong here. They belong somewhere else. So these inverted nuns, and we'll see this more clearly in a moment, act almost as sograyim, as parentheses, as if to say that these two psukim do not belong here. This is not their place. Lomar she'en ze mekomo. Ve'lama nichtav kan, so why were they written here? Kidei lahafsik ben puranut lepuranut v'chulei. Rashi says to break up, to cause a hefsek, a break, an interruption between, how would you define puranut?
Punishment.
A punishment, but really, they don't get punished here just yet. Maybe we'll say some sort of tragic event, okay? Some sort of, as we'll see, a sin of Bnei Yisrael, or maybe not of Bnei Yisrael, maybe of the Asaf Suf, but some sort of sin, some sort of negative thing. And we don't want to have these negative things in consecutive order. K'deita b'chol k'tvei akodesh. As we'll have in the Gemara and Masechet Shabbat. And here it's verse number 3. Is the passage from the Gemara and Shabbat that Rashi is referencing. And there's a parallel passage in the Sifrei. And other midrashic sources as well. And we'll read it together. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Vayibin Tzaron, Vayomer Moshe, Parasha zo asala HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Simaniot Milamala Ulamata. Now the Gemara here says, quotes a Braita, and says that this Parsha, Hashem, not just some individual or even Moshe, but Hashem placed Simaniot before and after. Rashi just says, Asalo. It's not clear. We're talking about Hashem, the Torah, Moshe. But the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kivyachol, Bichvodo Uvatzmo, placed these Simanim before or after. Lomar She'en Zemekoma, as if to say that this is not where it belongs. Okay, that's the Tanakam of the Braita. That's the first opinion. Rebbe Omer, but Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi says, Lo min Hashem hu ze. No. This is not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these markers or place marks, or parentheses. Ela b'pnei she'sefer chashuv hu b'pnei atzmo. Rather, it's considered its own sefer. It's considered its own sefer. Yeah. These two psukim, made up of 85 letters, according to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, are considered a sefer. Here. Kiman azlaha? According to whose opinion does that follow? The Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, quotes a pasuk in Mishlei Perek Tet, chapter 9. Chochmot banta veita, that's how the pasuk begins, with all forms of wisdom did she build her house. Chotzva amudeha shiv'a. She carved its 7 pillars. Chotzva amudeha shiv'a. What does it mean that she carved 7 pillars? How does Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, in the name of Rabbi Yonatan, darshan this posuk? Elu shiv'a sifrei Torah. It's talking about the 7 books of the Torah. Wait a minute. Growing up, I was always told that there are 5 books in the Torah, right? Chamisha chumshei Torah. In fact, that's why it's called the Pentateuch, right? 5 books in the Torah. But what he's saying here is that, no, there's actually 7, because these two psukim are considered to be a sefer, b'fnei atzmo. You have Breishit, right? You have Shmot. You have Vayikra. You have the first third of Bamidbar, right, up until this point. You have these two psukim. You have the rest, the last 3/4 of Bamidbar, right? And then you have what? Sefer Devarim. 7 books in total. And the Gemara asks, Kiman, whose opinion does that follow? Kirebi, like Rebbe, who believes that this is its own sefer. Okay? And that's why these two psukim are unique. That's why these two psukim are different. Man tana de paliga leha de Rebbe. So who argues with Rebbe? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who? He's the Tana that argues with Rebbe. The Tanya, now we have a bright to support him, right? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, atida parasha zo sheteaker mikan v'tikatev bimkoma. In the future, whatever that means, this parsha will eventually be uprooted from where it is, because, as we said at the beginning, it doesn't belong here. It's not supposed to be here. It was placed here for some reason. But in the future, it's going to be uprooted and it's going to be returned to its proper place. So the Gemara asks, okay, well, if that's true, if it doesn't actually belong here according to this opinion, v'lama katva kan, so why was it written here? And the Gemara says, k'dei lahafsig ben puranut rishona lepuranut shniyah. To make a break, a hefsek, an interruption between the first and second Puranut. Puranut shniyah mahi, what is the second? Vayihi ha'am kimit onanim. The people started to complain. Okay, as we know, Sefer Bamidbar is full of complaints. We Jews are very good at complaining. And in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, it begins, Vayiyam kimitonenim, Rab Osnei Hashem. Okay, that's the first bad thing. That's the second bad thing. Puranut Rishona, the first bad thing is, Bamidbar Yud, Vayisume Hashem. They traveled away from the mountain of God. The Amar Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina said, "She saru me'acharei Hashem." They ran away from Hashem. And then the Gemara asks, "Okay, well, according to this opinion that these two psukim don't belong here, the Heichan Mikoma, where should they be? What's their proper place?" Amar Rav Ashi b'Digalim, they're supposed to be in Bamidbar Perek Bet, chapter 2, with the Digalim, with the flags, where Hashem tells the Jewish people how to in camp, how to break up, how to move, how to travel. Now, it's interesting. A couple things. Number one, Rashi and the Gemara never says to write the letter Nun, inverted or otherwise. It just says place some sort of siman, some sort of marker, okay? Some sort of demarcation. Number two, according to this opinion, these two psukim don't belong here. The Rebbe, it's its own sefer. And by the way, that may have nafkaminog lahalacha, practical implications if it's its own sefer. The Mishnah in Yadayim talks about that our svarim, our mitameyat Yadayim, they used to store scrolls together with the truma, because you had to be pure to eat the truma, right? And so what was happening? Mice, rats, right? Vermin were coming. They were eating the truma. They were eating the nice challah you baked. And they were also eating away at the Torah scrolls, or the Sifrei Tanakh. So Chazal instituted that our Sfarim Kedoshim, the Sifrei Tanakh, are Mitameyat HaYadayim. So the Mishnah in Yadayim says, oh, these two psukim are considered its own scroll, and therefore it's Mitameyat HaYadayim. I'll take questions at the end. There's a discussion in Masechet Gittin, if you could just write psukim stam, you want to write down psukim, whether you can write psukim for children, do you need to write a whole sefer in order to justify writing a scroll, writing down psukim from the Torah? Maybe it has to be a whole sefer, maybe we're lenient when it comes to teaching children. It's a rich discussion in the Masechet Gittin. So if this is its own sefer, well, it can be written, these two psukim can be written on their own. And there are other nafkaminer as well. There's a source that talks about maybe these psukim require geniza like a sefer would require a geniza. If it's just scattered psukim without Shem Hashem, it might not require geniza. You might not have to bury it. But if it's a sefer, maybe that requires geniza. So there are some maybe nafkaminot lahalacha if it's its own sefer. But what's interesting is if you take a look at other sources, it talks about, for instance, in Medrash to Mishle, it says to place their nikud. It calls what we call simaniot nikud. It doesn't say anything about placing an inverted nun. Here I put down Avot de Rabbi Natan in source number 4, a passage from Avot de Rabbi Natan. Avot de Rabbi Natan is basically the first commentary on Pirkei Avot, okay? And there, very similar to what we saw, right? It says Shnei Simaniot Amurot b'Torah Parashak Tana Veizohi Parashak Tana VaYibin Saron. Here it calls it a parsha, a small parsha, and it says to put Simaniot in Masechet Sofrim, which is an important work on the laws of writing a Sefer Torah, reading a Sefer Torah, different minhagim when we read certain things, haftorot, etc., which according to the Chida is actually a later work. It's part of the Masechtot Ketanot, the small Masechtot. Usually find it printed in the back of like Masechet Avodah Zarah, along with Avot, and Masechet Smachot, and other, what we call minor tractates. So there, in Masechet Sofrim, and as I said, Masechet Sofrim is considered to be, you know, somewhat of a later work than the rest of the Gemara. According to the Chida, it's maybe as late as the Gaonic period. So there it calls it a Shippur, HaKotev tzarich lasot shipur. Someone who's writing a sefer Torah has to write a shipur b'pticha shel vayhi ben tzaro. Milamalan ulamatan. Before and after. What is a shipur?
To make it good.
Right. You do shiputzim, shipurim, right? Lishtaper is to improve. An improvement. What's interesting is there's another girsa, another version of the text that has it shi'ur. Shi'ur. What is a shi'ur? A measure. Okay, right, good. Maybe it could mean a space, right? Like a put in a space, a measure of something without a letter, which is going to be important because, as we'll see, there are opinions that have a problem with adding a letter to the Torah, even an inverted nun. Okay, and here, I just give you an example in source number 6 of another place where we have this idea to put simanim. This is a Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Zayin, source number 6. It's referring to Mizmor Kuf Zayin by Yitzaku El Hashem Batzar Lahem. They called out to Hashem in their distress. Yodul Hashem Chazdo, right? Thank you, Hashem. So, if you take a look at Tehilim Kuf Zayin here, I don't know if you can see, but here I have a Tehilim Kuf Zayin in my Tanakh. And what do you see? You have inverted nuns there as well. So Balakla is not the only place where we have a tradition to put these inverted nuns. You also have it in Tehilim Kuf Zayin. But the Gemara there too doesn't tell you explicitly to put a nun. What does it say? Asalehen simaniot. Make, again, signs, signals, ki'achim v'rakin shebatorah. Just like, right, what's the point there of putting some sort of signal or sign? Like the words ach and rak in the Torah. What are the words ach and rak? What do they do in the Torah? Who knows?
Means only, isn't it?
Right. They come to limit. It's lashon miut, right? And Chazal always darshan the ach and rak in the Torah. So the Gemara here is saying, so too, we can learn out something. We can darshan something by the fact that we have these spaces, these simanim, these inverted nuns there, in Tehilim Kuf Zayin, we can learn something, we can darshan something. Lomar lach, it's there to teach us. Tzaku kodem gzardin ne'enin. Tzaku lachar gzardin eina ne'enin. It's there to teach us an important principle. That it's not worth, or it's, if you scream and cry after there's already been a gzardin, after Hashem has made a decision, it's in vain. You can scream and cry before the gzardin. Then you could be answered. You scream and cry after the gzardin, it's a bracha levatala. Okay? But here's another example. And what's interesting is this example adds a little nekuda that it's not stam. It's not just random or arbitrary that we have these markers. There's something to be learned here. There's something to be learned here. Right? The Gemara is saying we have to darshan the fact that we have these markers there in Mizmor Kuf Zayin. Now, Rashi, there in Rosh Hashanah on the Gemara, Rashi writes, what are we writing, or what are these simanim? Ben pasuk lepasuk yesh simanim hafuchin kazeh. And in the printed edition of Rashi, you have an inverted nun. Okay? And we assume that that's from the original manuscripts. So he says, between the psukim, we put an inverted letter, and it looks like this. And maybe Rashi, in his own hand, in his manuscript, had an inverted nun. That's correct. That's Rashi's comments there on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Zayin.
And then what
he asked if that's referring to Tehillim. I said yes. Those are Rashi's comments on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Zayin.
What does he say, Rashi?
Rashi's explaining what the simaniot are. So, in our Gemara, in Shabbat, Daf Kuf Tetvav, Rashi doesn't explain what those simaniot are. The Gemara just says simaniot. And in his commentary on the Torah, Rashi doesn't tell us what those simaniot are. But in his commentary to Masechet Rosh Hashanah, on Tehilim Kuf Zayin, Rashi says that the simaniot are these inverted nuns. Okay. But again, what are they doing? Right? So we saw, the Gemara told us, they're there to separate between a number of tragic episodes. But the Gemara doesn't really explain what those tragic episodes are. Rashi also doesn't explain what those tragic episodes are. And if you take a look, the end of Perek Yud, the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, I put it on the sheets for you, but if you take a look inside of a Chumash, you see that there are actually three sins, if you will, three Puraniyot, three tragic episodes that take place. The first one isn't clear. It's just hinted at by the Gemara. The Gemara says that they traveled away from the mountain of God. Right? We just celebrated Shavuot, the Jewish people around Har Sinai. Here, the Torah describes how they left Har Sinai. Well, what's so bad about that? Right? There's nothing in the text which suggests that they did anything wrong. And yet the Gemara says that those nuns are there and those two psukim are there to separate between that first sin and the next sin, the mitonanim, who are complaining. But what was so bad about them traveling away from the mountain of God? What did they do wrong?
They didn't want any more mitzvah.
Oh, so Mrs. Harris already knows the famous midrash. That's actually not a midrash, or at least it doesn't appear in our midrash, the midrash that we have. It's quoted by the Ramban and Tosfot, as we'll see momentarily. That they ran away from Har Sinai, right? Like a school child runs away from their teacher, from school. They don't want more homework. We'll see in a moment the Lashon of the Ramban and Tosfot. So that's the first sin. Okay, the second sin would be the mitonanim. And what's the third sin? Anyone? So the third sin is the Asaf Suf that starts complaining about the man, and then, of course, the Jewish people join together with them. Okay? So three sins. And we don't want to have three sins consecutively. Why? What is three in our tradition? It's a chazakah, right? In halacha, it's a chazakah. So we don't want to have three negative episodes in a row. So we divide them up with these two psukim, which, as we saw in the Gemara, don't belong here. They were placed here. They actually belong in Perek Bet, the beginning of the Sefer, with the Digalim, where Hashem tells the Jewish people how to encamp and how to break down the Mishkan, and you know who's in charge of this and that, and the tribes and the flags, and carrying the Ark. It makes sense that these psukim, which refer to carrying the Ark, would belong at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. But they're placed here. So just quickly, we'll take a look at the Ramban here in source number 8, and Tosfot in source number 9. So the Ramban says, he quotes Rashi, and he says, "V'lo pireish lanu harav." The Rav, Rashi, doesn't explain what what that first sin was. "V'lo pireish lanu harav maha puranut hazo shehutzrach lav sigba." He doesn't explain what the puranut was that you have to interrupt. Because it's not clear what the Ramban is saying. It's not clear from the text, right? Mrs. Harris was a teacher at Yavne Academy for so many years, so she knows. But it's not clear from the Chumash, right? And take a look at Tosfot. You'll turn the page and look at the bottom of the Ramban, where I've underlined, "Aval inyan himidrash hazeh matzu oto ba'agada." This midrash, as I said, it's not found among our midrashic literature. We don't have this midrash, but he says it's found with the Agada. "Shenasume har Sinai b'simcha, kitinok haboreach mibet ha-sefer." The problem was the Jewish people left Har Sinai gladly, happily, b'simcha, like a child runs out of school on the last day of school. Mrs. Harris, you were in chinuch for so many years. Are children excited on the last day of school? Right? No more, what do we say? No more homework or no more books. No more teachers, dirty looks, no more pencils, no more...
The teachers are just as happy.
The teachers are just as happy. That's the secret. Oh, okay. I can relate. It's very relevant this time of year as children are finishing school. We want them to hopefully keep learning over the summer, but we do our best. And the Ramban continues, "Amru shemigarbe v'yitel lanu mitzvot." While they were afraid and said, "Oy, oy, oy, maybe Hashem will teach us more mitzvot. He'll give us even more mitzvot." V'zeu v'yisum e'ar Hashem, and explains how we learn it out actually from the text itself. Because as I said, it's not evident from the text itself. Shehaya machshavtam la'si atzman misham ipnei shehu har Hashem. Right? Vayisume har Hashem. They traveled because it was har Hashem. They wanted to travel away from Hashem. Vizehu puranut rishona. And we'll see in Tosfot also how we learn out from the psukim, or the pasuk itself. We'll see in a moment how Tosfot cites this medrash, really, which will learn out how the pasuk itself seems to hint at or intimate that they actually ran. Okay. And the Rambam continues and says, "V'hifsik shelo yu shalosh puraniyot smuchot zo lazo, v'nimtzu muchzakim bepuranit." And you have to make this break with these two psukim, right? With the inverted nun at the front and at the back to make a break, so you don't have three tragic episodes, three sins right next to each other, and the Jewish people will be muchzakim. It's a chazaka, as we said before. V'kara ha'chet puranut. Now he explains why it's called puranut, why the Gemara calls it puranut, right? Because when I asked you to translate what puranut is, it doesn't really translate into sin. So I've been using the word tragic episode, okay? But the Rabban says, V'kara ha'chet puranut afal pi shelo ira lehem mimenu puranut. It's called puranut even though they weren't punished because of it. V'shem omali chatam ze haya machnisim la. Because maybe without their sin here, they would have entered into the land of Israel or been brought into the land of Israel immediately. Wow. We're going to come back to this idea. We're going to come back to this idea because this is very important. This is very crucial in understanding what these two psukim are doing here and in understanding the flow of Sefer Bamidbar and some of the larger themes of Sefer Bamidbar. Now, Tosfot, where I've underlined, this is Tosfot to that Gemara and Shabbat that we began with. Tosfot writes that the Puranut Rishona, what was the first tragic episode, which the Gemara does not explain very well, just hints at it, Kidamar b'Midrash Ilamdenu, he cites the Midrash Ilamdenu, but again, we do not have this particular Midrash, or this particular passage. Vayisu, what does it mean that they traveled? Shenasume har Sinai derech shloshet yamim. Oh, they traveled, it says, a distance of 3 days. Kitino koyotse mi beta sefer, like a child leaving school. Shebarech lo, volech lo. Child runs away, right? Kach hayu borchi mehar Sinai derech shloshet yamin. Lefi she lamdu harbe Torah b'Sinai. So too, they ran away from Har Sinai a distance of 3 days. And that's important. A distance of 3 days. Because they learned so much Torah at Har Sinai, they didn't want any more mitzvot. Enough already! Enough homework, enough tests, enough mitzvot. Now, what does that imply when you say a distance of 3 days? It's a 3-day journey. It doesn't necessarily mean it took you 3 days, right? Could be that, you know, once upon a time, I don't know, Jerusalem to Be'er Sheva was a 3-day journey. It's a 3-day journey. Today it takes just over an hour, because it depends on how much traffic there is. Okay? I could say from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv is 50 minutes. Doesn't mean it took me 50 minutes. I could say it's a 50-minute drive. They traveled a distance of 3 days. It doesn't mean it took them 3 days. And for the Medrash, it implies that it took them less. That, in fact, they ran away. Because the Torah could have said, they traveled for 3 days. Instead, no. It says it was a 3-day journey. Derech shloshet yamim. They made it in less. That's what the Midrash is implying. And so you see, from the text itself, it hints or intimates at the fact that this is the first mistake. They ran away from Har Hashem. They traveled a distance of 3. It could have taken them much less. I always laugh when you notice in the newspapers or the Alonei Shabbat, you'll see they're advertising a new community. They want people to buy homes in some new yeshuv. And they'll always say it's a 25-minute drive from Jerusalem or something. Well, yeah, maybe that's if you're doing, I don't know, 120 kilometers per hour the entire time, right? They don't tell you how long right? How long it will actually take you. They give you the distance, right? It's derech shlosh. I mean, it could take longer. It could take shorter. And for the Medrash, obviously, it took them less time because they ran.
So what's the significance of their going 3 days?
Oh, okay. Good. But I'd like to focus on a different question. What is the role of these two psukim, and what are these inverted nuns? Right? Because, you know, we can't add a letter to a Sefer Torah that passels a Sefer Torah. You can't just stam add letters. I once was called to the Torah. I'm a Kohen, so I get a lot of aliyahs. Baruch Hashem. Get a lot of aliyahs. Get called up a lot. And I was once called up to a sefer, and I see that it had been checked by a sofer who made markings while checking the sefer, but he didn't erase them. He made markings in pencil. And he made checks, and he made O's, and he made some X's, and it's a real shaila. Is he adding to the sefer? Now you could argue, well, you know, maybe it's okay, maybe it's not exactly a letter, it's just a stray mark. But as we'll see, the Maharshal is against any additional letter, and it's not just the Maharshal. That's how we paskin. Any additional letter, and maybe any stray mark is a problem, if it's not part of the Masoret. Now these textual anomalies that I mentioned before, at the beginning of the shiur, the small letters, the large letters, the broken letters, the dots. We have a tradition. We have a masoret. It's part of our tradition to write these things. However, when it comes to these inverted nuns, the Gemara and the Medrash never says make a nun. It just says add a siman, some sort of sign, some sort of marker. So the Maharshal, writing in the 16th century, was very against this practice of writing inverted nuns. And we'll take a look together at just a small part of a longer tshuva. The Maharshal, he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Brisk, then of course in the famous Yeshiva of Chochmei Lublin, lived from 1510 to 1573. And he writes the following. Take a look where I've underlined in source number 10. Source number 10. V'tama ani aleihem. I am bewildered by these things. Lichtov bet otiot batorah shelo letzorich uleposla. Writing these two letters, these inverted nuns, it's not letzorich. There's no need, and it passes the Sefer Torah. Sha harei afilu ot achat yitera poselet. This is halacha. This is something everyone knows. Even one additional letter passes the Sefer Torah. Even a stray marking, okay, even dots, if you want to put in vowels, you want to vocalize the text, right, nikudot, that passes the Sefer Torah. Kol shekein, all the more so, chi haigavna, what we're talking about, these inverted nuns, v'lo amrinan sh'asa la'kodosh baruch hu simanim ela ratzalomar parasha lefaneha ula'achareha. Oh, what does it mean when the Gemara says make simanim or simaniot? It means make it its own parsha. Put in a space. Now, when we talk about parsha, we usually think of parsha class, right? This is a parsha class, the parashat HaShavua, the weekly Torah portion. But a parsha is any section in the Torah. And there are two types of parshiot. There are ptuchot and stumot. Ptuchot are open parshiot, right? The line ends in the middle of the line, the pasuk ends, and then you hit your enter key, right, on your keyboard, and you go down to the next line. That's an open parsha. And then there are stumot, closed parshiot, signaling a new section, but instead of going down to the next line, instead of hitting the enter key, you hit the space bar 9 times. You leave a space of 9 characters, and that's called a stuma. So that's what the Maharshal is saying the intent of the Gemara is. Maharshal's saying, don't put in stray letters, because that passes a Sefer Torah. And where does the Gemara say put in a stray letter? The Gemara says this is his own Parsha, it's his own Sefer. You have to put in some sort of siman, some sort of marker, but it doesn't say put in a letter. Ki min hadin, right? Ki min hadin, lo haya lo lehafsik sharei le'el minei ktiv aron brit Hashem nosea lifnehem, ela shebal harot siman, le'bashem begam li'o kitamei, ule'rebi kitamei. So he cites the Gemara. He says, okay, fine, we want to show that this is a new section, a new sefer maybe, according to one opinion. But he writes, and he continues, Vita'u ha-talmidim. The students, meaning the later generations, made a mistake. V'savru sha-simanim heim kinunim. They thought that these signs are inverted nuns. Aval ha-Rambam v'shum mechaber lo hizkiru. But the Rambam and all the other poskim, all the other Rishonim, do not mention this. Now, the truth is, as we'll see, it's not so true. The Rashba will quote Rav Hai Gaon, who is a Gaon, in answer to your question, that there was a tradition to write an inverted nun. We'll look at this in a moment. It has to do with Hilchot Shabbat. We'll see shortly. So there are Rishonim and maybe even Gaonim that mention this practice of writing an inverted nun. But the Rambam doesn't mention it. And as we know, the Rambam is the leading authority when it comes to how to write a Sefer Torah, because the Rambam writes in his Mishneh Torah that he was writing a Sefer Torah. He saw so many different mistakes among the different Sfarim, so many different textual anomalies, variations really, differences, how things were spelled, chaserot, yiterot, and he wanted to put together one authoritative text. And so he looks at this Ben Asher text, which most probably was the Aleppo Codex. If you know the story of the Aleppo Codex, it's a fascinating story. You could see it or part of it in Heichal HaSefer, the Shrine of the Book. Okay, although actually, I think it's just a facsimile. I think they're fooling the public. I think what we have left of it is actually in a vault somewhere. But you can learn about it there, Lefachot. So the Rambam, he consults this authoritative Ben Asher text, he writes, and he writes down all the parshiot, tuchot, tumot, all the important things, the differences, to create one clear, authoritative psak halacha, and he writes his own sefer. He says he bases his own sefer that he wrote, Rambam wrote a sefer tov, on this text, and he records all the important points in terms of when there were differences and how things should be, how things should be written, how the shirot hayam should be written. There's a lot to say on this, but the Rambam is authoritative, and here the Maharshal saying the Rambam doesn't record this. What does the Rambam say in his Perush HaMishnah? The Rambam says that these two psukim are its own sefer, right? And therefore they're written as its own parsha. And for the Rambam, that's how he understood, obviously, what these simaniot are, just to be written as its own new parsha. Okay, but the Maharshal says, right, this isn't mentioned by anyone. As I said, we'll see momentarily, the Rashba quotes Rav Hai Gaon. Then he continues, where I've underlined next, he writes, V'hine chipasti ubadakti b'sifrei Torah v'ra'iti yud bet tmunot b'inyan hanunin. He says something else. You know why this is a bad minhag? You know why this is a mistake? Because there's so much inconsistency. I looked at different Sifrei Torah and I found, he writes, 12 different variations of this inverted nun. As I mentioned, sometimes it's written just inverted, sometimes it's inverted and flipped upside down. And the Maharshal says, this is a bad minhag, this is a mistake. And you know, I know, because there's no consistency. It's all over the place. And if you take a look here, two last pages, pages 3 and 4. I copied for you from the Torah Shlema of Rav Menachem Kasher. Torah Shlema of Rav Menachem Kasher is an encyclopedic work. All the Midrashim, and there are all sorts of fascinating supplements and articles there that he wrote. He was a huge Talmid Chacham. You know, it was before the computers. But he had a computer for a mind and had access to all these manuscripts and gives all different versions of the Midrashim on the Torah. And there has a lot of very rich, rich discussions of halacha and mesorah. Very important stuff. So there he also has pictures. And if you take a look at the bottom of page 3, he has some different variations of nuns. And there was a tradition in some Sifrei Torah, and Menachem Mendel Kasher is going through Sifrei Torah, and he's going through manuscripts, ancient manuscripts. This also, Mrs. Harris, addresses your question. In some editions, or in some Sfarim, some manuscripts, some Sifrei Torah, there was a tradition to write the word Kimit Onanim, And the Jews were complaining with special types of nuns. And here, if you'll turn to the top of page 4, the very last line, we'll show you different versions of the letter nun in Balotcha that are used to separate these two psukim. So you see, the Marashah is onto something. He says there's so many different versions. And for him, that was proof that this is some sort of mistake. In other words, if there was actually a tradition, so it should be consistent. Everyone should be doing the same thing. The Noda Yehuda, writing in the 18th century, lived from 1713 to 1793, Rabbi Cheska Landau, he was a dayan of Prague. If you go to a museum, one of the shuls there, I've been to Prague a number of times, Baruch Hashem, you could see some of his manuscripts. You could see even a keter, a Torah crown, beautiful silver Torah crown that he donated to the Altanoi shul, he himself. I don't know with what they pay rabbis today, but... Firstly, just for the sake of time, we'll skip this. Firstly, he kind of attacks those who are basing themselves on the Zohar, because the Zohar mentions this inverted nun explicitly. So the Gemara doesn't mention a nun. The Gemara just says place markers, simanim. But the Zohar mentions the inverted nun. And the Noda B'Yehuda is coming shortly after Shabtai Tzvi, when there was a backlash, a pushback against the study of Kabbalah, certainly against the public dissemination of Kabbalah. Okay? Shabtai Tzvi dies in 1676. And the Noda B'Yehuda is fighting along with other rabbis of his generation against the Crypto-Sabbateans. Crypto-Sabbateans were Jews and even rabbis among them who kind of went underground. They still believed Shabtai Tzvi was a Mashiach, but they went underground. And the Noda B'Yehuda is very much against following Psak Halacha from the Zohar. It's a famous tshuva. He uses very strong language against the people who are saying L'Shem Yichud. Everyone's just saying L'Shem Yichud, making all sorts of Yichud and joining Hashem's name together before they perform mitzvos. He says that's the whole point of making a bracha before you do a mitzvah. The reason why Chazal instituted bracha before you do a mitzvah is to make you, to awaken kavanah within you. You don't need to say all sorts of fancy kavanot. According to some, he was really against it being said by the Hamun Am. The fact that it becomes so popular. And that's what he seems to be saying here. He says, you know, we don't pask in halach, we don't follow minhag based on the Zohar. But nevertheless, he goes on to defend this minhag. And so take a look where I've underlined towards the bottom of the page, that second passage there. You'll see how he defends the Noda B'Yehuda in source number 11, towards the bottom of the page, bottom of page 2. See how he defends this practice. Basically says that the letter nun, if it's inverted or upside down, it's not a letter. It's no longer a letter. He writes, Mishum chashash yeter ot, in kan klal. No concern that this is an additional letter. Shekvar katavti she'ein makor v'shoresh ladin shel rashal, lipsol mishum yeter ot. There's no source, no rhyme, no reason, according to the Marashal, the pasul, a Sefer Torah that has this inverted nun because of yeter ot, because it has an additional letter. He says it's inverted. So it's not the letter nun. It's not called a letter. It doesn't have shame ot bichlal. Okay? And there's actually a proof to that from the Rashba to Masechet Shabbat. Turn quickly to source number 12, and then we're going to kind of sum everything up. The Mishnah is talking about the Isur of Kotev, writing on Shabbat, which is one of the 39 Melachot, one of the 39 prohibited categories of work. And in order to be over, to violate the Torah prohibition, at least on a Torah level, there has to be some rhyme, reason, not that some form, some context to it. If you just scribble, right, or write something, a letter here, a letter there, you haven't violated at least the Torah prohibition of writing. Maybe it's rabbinically prohibited, but at least you haven't violated the Torah prohibition. The example is you write Shame Mishmuel. That's where the Sefer, the Hasidic Sefer, gets its name from. You write the two letters Shin Mem of the word Shmuel. Well, that already has some meaning, right? Shame is the word that means name. So, the Mishnah is saying, HaKotev Shtei Otiot Ben Bimino, ben bismolo, whether it's your right hand, your left hand, ben mishem echad, ben mishnei shemot, ben mishnei simaniot. Bechol ashon chayav. According to the Tanakama, you're obligated, you violated a Torah prohibition, Torah isur. And what is mishnei simaniot? What does that mean? Right? So the Rashba, quoting Rav Hai Gaon, says, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about these inverted nuns. What are we talking about? What letters are called markers or signs? Kigon, for example, oh, we're talking about these nunin hafuchin, the inverted nuns in our parsha. Diktive gabe v'ibn soaron. Kimi d'furash b'gmara, d'chol kitvei ha-kodesh. That's what we're talking about. So, you see, okay, maybe there's proof to the fact that that's not really considered a letter. Or maybe it is considered a letter. That's the argument. Although our tradition is that we write these inverted nuns. We don't paskin like the Maharshal. It's part of our tradition. What are they there to do? So we said they're there to indicate its own sefer. Right. By the way, I'll just mention parenthetically, Professor Saul Lieberman notes that in a lot of ancient Greek texts, you have glyphs or inverted letters to indicate that something doesn't belong or that something is its own section. Okay, and almost like a marker indicating that there's a new section. It's called a reversed sigma. Based on a Geniza fragment, there are those who suggest these two psukim are part of the prophecy of Eldad and Medad, and maybe Chazal wanted to hide them away. They wanted to be gonez them. Okay. Well, it's easy to understand why they might make that connection, right? Very close to each other, you have two passages that are very hard to understand, hard to explain. You have the prophecy of Eldad and Medad, and then you have these two psukim that don't really belong there, that are surrounded by these inverted nuns. But as many have explained, and it's actually a fascinating article written on this topic, is this the prophecy of Eldad and Medad by Professor Schneer Lyman. I wrote many years ago. But some explain that, no, the intent is that, as we mentioned before, it's its own sefer. And if it's its own sefer, a sefer of 85 letters can be put in Geniza. Okay? Not that somehow Chazal felt this, it was a later addition to the Torah. It doesn't really belong to the Torah. It was Eldad and Medad, and therefore they wanted to put in Geniza. That's not the proper interpretation. Rather, it's a sefer which requires Geniza. That's how some explain. In any case, why? Why are these things there? Right? As I mentioned before, they're like parentheses. They're like parentheses. They're there to tell us that these psukim don't belong. Okay. But why the letter nun? And I think this really sheds light, and we'll end with this idea. I think this really sheds light on their role here at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Why the letter nun? What does the letter nun mean to you? If I would ask you the question, how do you feel about the letter nun? What would you say? Any suggestions? Huh?
Fish.
It's fish. Why? Oh, that's what it means in Aramaic. Okay, good. Fine. Yeah.
Nefilah.
Oh. Nefilah. Falling. Nun gets a bad rap. Nun has a negative connotation, maybe. Oh. So take a look at source number 15. Here's a few lines from the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. Which letter is absent from Ashrei?
Nun.
The letter Nun. Why? Because it refers to a nifilah. We'll see what that is. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Take a look at source number 15. Mipnei ma lo ne'mar nun be'ashrei. Why does the letter nun not appear in Ashrei? Ashrei is in alphabetical order, right? Aleph through Tav, except we don't have a pasuk that begins with the letter nun. Why? Mipnei sheyesh ba mapalatan shel sonei Yisrael. Because it has in it, or it alludes to the downfall of the Sonei Israel, the haters of Israel. But that's a nice way where the Gemara is talking about the bad guys. Is Jews who, you know, are not doing the right thing. Okay? So that's why we leave the letter Nun out. Dichtiv, as is written, Sefer Amos, Perek Hey, Nafla lo tosif kum betulat Yisrael. She has fallen, and she will not get up, the maiden of Israel. B'ma'arava mitartzela hachi. But in the West, what is the West? Eretz Yisrael, right here in Eretz Yisrael. We're so positive, we always look at the bright side of things. Here in Eretz Yisrael, they interpreted the pasuk differently. Or really, they punctuated the pasuk differently. It's all about how you read the pasuk. It's where you put in that comma. Okay, and this is so beautiful. Nafla, pause, v'lo tosif lin pol od. She has fallen, comma, she won't fall again. Kum betulat Yisrael, arise, the maiden of Israel. Oh, in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't read it as doom and destruction and something negative, but they put a positive spin on it. It's about redemption, right? She's fallen, but she will no longer continue to fall. Arise, O maiden of Israel. Right? Nafla, she's fallen. Lo tosif kum, she won't get up, betulat Yisrael. Or, Nafla lo tosif, she won't fall anymore. Kum betulat Yisrael. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, where continues, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, Afilo hachi, even so, Chazar David v'samchan b'ruach HaKodesh. David saw Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed, the Jewish people would be scattered. He left out the letter Nun, right? But what did he put in the next pasuk? Right? Oh, a hint to this nefilah, but a positive thing, right? Picking back up the pieces. Somech Hashem l'kol hanuflim. Hashem picks up all who are fallen. He supports all who are fallen. So you see from this Gemara that Nun has a negative context. Right? And even if you think about it, there's so many words, both in Hebrew and in English, that begin with the letter Nun or the letter N, that have kind of a negative context, right? No. In Yiddish, you might say nisht, right? There are a lot of words that begin with the letter Nun that have a negative context. Why? What is it about the letter Nun or the letter N? So, I'm not a speech therapist, a speech pathologist. I've never studied this. But I did a little research, and I could be totally off. But I believe that it's because the letter N or Nun has a harsh sound to it. And maybe that's why when language developed, just maybe, when language developed, a lot of negative words, negative even starts with the letter N, right? A lot of negative words start with the N sound because it's considered, or it's called, a dental consonant. What is a dental consonant? Okay, you use your teeth. It's articulated by placing your tongue at the gum ridge and where your top teeth begin. So it's called a dental consonant, and it has this strong, harsh sound to it. And maybe that's why the letter Nun or N has this kind of negative connotation, and a lot of negative words begin with it, and maybe that's why it's dafka, the letter Nun, that's used in this very negative way in Sefer Bamidbar. Now, we said that these two psukim are there to make a hefsek, some sort of interruption between when the Jewish people are sinning, right? Three sins of the Jewish people, they sin three times in a row, and then the rest of Sefer Bamidbar is full of what? That's what Sefer Bamidbar, I'm sorry?
Lots of complaints,
right? Now, if you take a look, where did we say these two psukim belong? Originally, what was their place? Originally.
By the Degalim.
At the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, in Perek Bet, yes. And in fact, Gemara says, according to one opinion, eventually they'll be uprooted and returned to where they belong. Now, this shouldn't bother us. There's a concept of Ein Mukdam Mochar BaTorah. Right? Torah is not written in chronological order. It's a major theme in the commentary of the Ramban, Ein Mukdam Mochar BaTorah. So it doesn't bother us that it's not, you know, according to chronology. But these two psukim belong where? At the beginning. Why? What is Sefer Bamidbar all about? What is the first third of Sefer Bamidbar preparing the Jewish people to do? to enter. In fact, there's an opinion that says they should have entered immediately. What do we have in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar? Right. The Jewish people are counted. They're assigned flags to their tribes. They're told how to assemble formations, flags, how to break camp, how to set up camp. Oh, they're going to travel by night by fire, by day by cloud. Al pi Hashem, Yisau b'nei Yisrael. Al pi Hashem, Yachanu. Yachanu al pi Hashem. Vayisau, pi Hashem. Right? And they're given the trumpets. Do, 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 right? The trumpets are going to signal, and they're all ready to go. And then what happens? What happens? The Chet HaMeraglim. But what's fascinating, we saw there's an opinion that it wasn't the Chet HaMeraglim that prevented them. Maybe this is the Ramban based on this Medrash. Maybe it was these series of sins right here in Parashat Bahalotcha, Perek. It certainly begins this downward spiral. So the first third of Sefer Bamidbar is all about preparing to take apart the camp and to travel and to enter into Eretz Yisrael immediately. And then all of a sudden, we have the end of Perek Yud and the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, and it's all downhill from here. Chet after chet. The Jewish people are complaining, right? They don't like the mun, they don't have water. Why did you take us out of Egypt? We have the sin of the spies, the Chet HaMeraglim, for which the Jewish people are punished. They have to wander in the desert for 40 years, and the entire Dor HaMidbar has to die out. We have the Jewish people sinning with the women of Moab and Midian in the plains of Shittim, even princes of Israel, Zimri, Cosby, story with Pinchas. We have Korach's rebellion. There's a coup, a rebellion against Moshe's authority. And if you would have to describe the rest of Sefer Bamidbar after these two nuns, what would you call it? How would you describe it? It's a book of what? Any suggestions? Don't all answer at once.
Downhill.
It's a book of downhill. It's a book of rebellion. Right? It's a book of rebellion against Hashem, against Moshe's authority. It's a very tragic book with tragic episode after tragic episode. And here come these two psukim, which don't belong here. They really belong at the beginning of the Sefer in Perek Bet, where the Jewish people are told how to break down their camp and flags and encampments and whatnot. And it signals something. It signals a downward spiral, a nefilah with the letter nun. It represents a complete shift, a complete turnabout, a transition in the Sefer, where the first third of the Sefer is hopeful. It's all about entering into Eretz Yisrael. And all of a sudden, these two psukim, surrounded by these inverted nuns, signal to us, because that's what they are. It's a sign, it's a signal to us this shift, this transition, this downward spiral that runs throughout the rest of Sefer Bamidbar. And it's so interesting that it's dafka, the letter nun. Thank you. I don't want to keep you. I'll just take a couple of questions quickly. Yes.